Access number 29549, Mr. John McGough, Reel 2. Now, we're just talking about your time with 70th Young Soldiers Battalion, Essex Regiment at Upminster, from January 41 onwards. We were looking at a sort of typical day and, you know, the sort of things that would happen. So after breakfast, what sort of training session would you go into? What were the...
Well, I particularly remember, for some reason, the officers and senior NCOs were very, very keen on route marching. So we marched all over.
What was a typical route march like then?
Well, one I particularly remember was what we called the 10-mile run march, and you're in full battle kit, and for 10 miles, you ran for so many minutes, walk for so many minutes, ran for so many minutes, walk for so many minutes, for 10 miles. And at the end of the 10 miles, you were taken straight away onto the rifle range to fire your rifles. You could hardly hold your rifles after all the exertion to fire at the target. I always remember that. But we were fit and young, and in a sense, we enjoyed it.
What about drill sessions? How did you take to drill?
Oh, I was always keen on drill.
Now, why did you like it? Because some people don't, some people do.
Because I thought it was great. A polyglot lot of men from all backgrounds come together, not knowing each other really, not knowing how to move or walk properly or be smart. And within a couple of weeks, with the training, you're all drilled, smart, keen, did everything together.
So you enjoyed it?
I enjoyed it.
Did you have any problems with it?
No.
What about weapons training? Take me through the weapons you learned.
The weapon was... Now, if I remember, we had some Canadian rifles to start with.
That would be the Ross rifle.
The Ross rifle, the P-40 Ross rifle, yes.
Tell me about that, because that's quite unusual. What was it like, the Ross?
Well, they came to us in wooden cases full of... I don't know how many rifles were in each case, all greased up. And they come from Canada, I believe. And they were issued to us because we hadn't got enough Lee Enfield rifles. We had some Lee Enfield, but we had these Ross rifles. And our job was to degrease them with hot water and then use them until we got issue with the Lee Enfield rifle.
What did you think of the Ross rifle?
Well, I liked it. I liked the aperture, the sight. It was a circular back sight and the front, the normal stick up aiming sight. So you look through a little circle, whereas with the Lee Enfield, it was a V. The backside was a V shape, and it wasn't, as in my opinion, as convenient as an aperture.
Now, how did you find it when you first fired it on the range? Because you haven't had much practice on a proper rifle with a home guard, have you? If any.
No.
How did you find the Ross to fire?
To be quite truthful, I cannot ever remember firing the Ross. I can remember firing the Lee Enfield. Okay. So we must not have had them for too long a period.
So what other weapons were you introduced to?
The Bren gun. The Bren gun and
now,
the rifle.
About the Bren gun. How did your Bren gun training go?
Oh, that was quite interesting. And we had one mounted in Upminster. We had one mounted by a billet in Upminster on a tripod in case of aeroplanes coming over.
How much training did you do on the Bren? Did you learn to take it apart? Did you fire it?
Oh yes, we could do it. Learn to do it. Learn on the parts, name the parts, and how to reassemble it. And not to forget that after, I think it was after every 10 magazines that were fired, you had to change the barrel because the barrel got hot. A spare barrel which we replaced the used one with.
And what about other weapons? Did you do bayonet training?
Yeah, bayonet training with straw men.
What would you do?
You'd be lined up, and the sergeant would say, "This is the enemy," says, and he showed you what to do, how to stick the bayonet, and where to stick it. In the abdomen, if possible, and then twist the rifle before we were drawing it from the poor unfortunate victim. We got quite proficient in bayonet drills and all rifle drills and.
What about that? I noticed in the notes it says you used a Hotchkiss before the Bren. Do you remember that?
Yes, I vaguely remember the Hotchkiss. It was a, I believe it was a French machine gun, again from the First World War. But it had a metal ammunition feed. And after you fired it for a while, the metal feed used to jam. It wasn't flexible like they had in the others.
So you much preferred the Bren?
Yes.
So you know all this weapon training. Did you do any tactical training?
We did exercise.
While you were at Hornchurch, or
well,
or was it when you? Sorry, while you were at Upminster. Sorry, I'm confusing you there.
No, not much tactical training at all. Not at Upminster.
Let's go back to the typical day. So you'd be doing training sessions, and then what time would you finish?
Oh, about 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
And then what would you do?
Well, the time was your own.
Did you have a lot of bull, you know, getting your kit ready for inspection?
Oh, yes, they were very, very keen.
How would you prepare for a kit inspection? What would you have to do to your boots?
Well, one of the tricks of the trade was to turn your trousers inside out and grease the seams with soap. Then put them back to normal, put them under your bed and sleep in them, and you've got a beautiful crease in the morning. And, of course, nobody liked getting a new pair of boots because they were rough-toed. And you had to spit and polish and clean. It took hours and hours to get them to the very, very, very smooth, shiny finish that they required.
How did you take the bull? I mean, did you see the point of it? Did you enjoy it, or did you kick against? Well, or just, you know.
No, I had no particular objection to it, because the end result, you could see the end result when all the men were lined up, as smart and tidy and efficient looking they were. Even if they may not have been efficient, but they did look efficient.
And what was a kit inspection like? Do you remember?
Oh, my goodness me, kit inspection. Everything had to be laid out. They gave you a photograph of how your kit should be laid out. And everything had to be laid out exactly as the diagram, to within the merest half inch. Even a half inch out was wrong. So everything had its place.
And what would they do if it was wrong?
If it was wrong, they'd say, I'll see your kit again in a couple of hours.
You
had to
knock it off or throw it out the window or anything, then?
No, I've heard or seen that in pictures, film, but never happened to me. They never threw stuff out of your lockers, no.
What about, would you go to the canteen at all? Was there a canteen or a naffy?
There was a naffy, but we didn't have much money, because I think our pay at that time was 2 shillings a day, 14 shillings a week. And I allocated 7 shillings a week to my mother. So I had 7 shillings a week. You had to pay out of your pocket for barrack damages, if any damages to the barracks. There was a collective fine, and you'd lose some of your money that way. But we didn't have a lot of money. We had a tea and a wad. Tea and a wad. A wad, of course, being like a donut.
Was there anything in there for you to do, dance or any music or anything?
No, just eating.
Now, how long were you at Upminster? Because you go to Hornchurch, don't you?
Yes, I
was. Which company were you in? Were you in D Company?
D Company.
Were you always in D Company?
To the best of my knowledge, yes. But you see, the purpose of the Young Soldier Battalion were men who could be trained as soldiers were not allowed to be sent overseas until they were 18, I think it was, whatever it was. And in the interim period, while they were waiting to attain the age when they could be dispatched overseas, they were guarding aerodromes. And my particular section of the unit, we guarded Hornchurch Aerodrome.
So D Company went to guard Hornchurch?
Hornchurch Aerodrome, yeah.
And is this when you went into billets?
Yeah, we had standard RAF accommodation then.
So what was that like?
A long single story, like a listen house, long story, long. To the best of my knowledge, it was a single story building. Now, I don't know what the heating was like, if it had got settled either, or if it got the stove in the middle, I just can't remember.
Were they reasonably comfortable?
Oh, yes, they were very comfortable, very comfortable.
Better than the billets or the...
Yes.
Now, what about... So what were you doing? Tell me about the defences you had at Hornchurch.
Well, We were dug in all round the perimeter of the airfield at various sites and with fixed positions. So if anybody was approaching the airdrome, we got all the surrounding area covered.
And how were you armed at this point?
With Mills bombs, rifle, and Bren guns.
Have you had much training with? So you'd have got the more modern. So it was Lee Enfield's by then.
Lee Enfield's then, but yes.
And had you had? I forgot to ask you. Did you have hand grenade training?
Oh yes, we had a hand grenade in. They tied the rope. They put two sticks in the ground, joined them with a rope. Then, when you threw the grenade, you had to make sure they went over the rope, not underneath it. And we practiced time and time again. So, in the end, we always got the trajectory right, even though the line was not there, you see.
And did you throw any live ones?
Yes, we did throw live ones.
What was that like?
Well, it was very, very scary, especially when they went off. But fortunately, nobody had any accidents.
Now, there were other troops there, weren't there?
Yeah, to the best of my there were some Canadian troops there. They were they got anti-aircraft guns.
How did you mix with them?
No, not at all. We thought they were always a bit indisciplined. It may not be right, but we thought so because they weren't as smart as we were, and they didn't sort of walk around in a military fashion, not like we were taught to do.
Now tell me about you also did guard duties on the main gate, I think.
Yes, we did.
About that, cause there's a story relating to that you've got in here.
Yes, it's the first time in all my time in the service, I've never known this happened before. We were on parade, mounting the guard.
Well, tell us about the guard. What did the guard duties mean first? We'll come to the story second. What did it mean when you were on guard?
Patrolling the perimeter and manning the main gates, the main entrance and exits, making sure they were covered, and mobile patrol around the perimeter of the airfield.
Now, tell us this story. You were on parade, or guard parade.
And the defaulters, people who've been in military discipline charge, were brought out in front of us, including WAFs. And these WAFs and these male soldiers were paraded, and the sergeant major said to us, if you see these people trying to get out the main gate, don't let them out. They're confined to camp. So you physically saw the face. It must have been very, very embarrassing when these young women would be paraded in front of a crowd of literally healthy soldiers, you know. You can imagine what it was like for them. But I never saw that before, and I've spoken to my military colleagues and ex-servicemen, and they never heard of that being done, but definitely done at Hornchurch Essex, because I was on guard when it happened. So I know it's true.
You went on training exercises from Hornchurch, around Leigh-on-Sea and Epping Forest, around there. Tell us about that.
Well, most of our training was the route marches. They seemed to love route marches. But we did some little tactical exercises, like attacking a defended enemy position, the best way to set about it, generally things like
what
that.
What kind of tactics were you using, do you remember?
Stealth, observation, and a knowledge of what you thought the enemy had in the position, what ammunition they had, what guns they had, and so you acted according to what you thought they had. But a lot of it is a very, very vague memory.
Now, you had some civilian, you moved into some civilian houses at times, and there seems to be a bit about you clearing out the attics to stop fires, you know, I mean, obviously if you were bombed off or incendiary. Do you remember that at all?
Yeah, this was at Leigh-on-Sea. And
is this during the tactical exercise, or did you actually move to Leigh-on-Sea?
Well, while we were at Leigh-on-Sea before, actually I think it was before we went to Hornchurch, and we're in these civilian houses, and the sergeant major said to my friend and I, says, clear out the attic, there's a pile of old rubbish in there. So we went up, and I found these letters tied up with a blue ribbon. And being inquisitive and imaginative, I looked at them, and a letter from a man who was a travelling salesman to his then sweetheart, all dated around the turn of the century, perhaps later. Very interesting. So I said to the sergeant major, these are interesting historical documents, says burn them. He didn't think so. I would have kept them myself. So evidently this girl had got them and tied them all off in a little, in a blue tape, you see.
Now, the next is you get your first promotion to acting unpaid land corporal. Tell me about that. What difference does that make?
Well, acting unpaid lance corporal, if you had potential and they thought you'd make a lance corporal, they didn't pay you to start, they made you an acting unpaid lance corporal, a grandiose title. I always pull my daughter's legs about the fact that I was an acting unpaid lance corporal. What it means, instead of wearing a lance corporal stripe on both arms, you wore it on one arm only. Didn't get paid for it. As soon as they thought you were qualified, they let you wear the stripe on both arms and gave you the pay associated with the rank. So I was acting unpaid lance corporal.
The next thing is, you start to train on the mortar, now the 3-inch mortar, and you actually become promoted to corporal in charge of it. Now tell me about the mortar, the 3-inch mortar.
Yeah, well, the 3-inch mortar, when I first started training in the 3-inch mortar, we carried it in a 1500-weight army truck, and of course that meant we couldn't go off-road. And it was a great day for us when we got supplied with Bren gun carriers. We carried the mortar in the Bren and crew.
Tell us about the 3-inch mortar first, and we'll take the Bren carrier then. Describe the 3-inch mortar and how you fire it? What the sort of firing drill is?
Yeah, well, it's got a large metal base plate on which the mortar tube was mounted. It could swivel on the base plate. And what happened? The officer, the NCO in charge of the mortar, was in my case, I was the officer in charge of the mortar. I'd go to a selected position out in front of the mortar and survey the ground, decide on the target, and then send the instructions back to the crew, what elevation, and so on to set. So, and then we'd fire a test shell and see, and adjust your next shell to see that you hit the target.
And what range of, I mean, could it, what range and how fast could you fire?
Well, I think it was a 10-pound shell, if I'm not mistaken, and about 1,600 yards.
And what do you think of it as a weapon?
A very, very, very marvellous weapon, a marvellous weapon.
Now tell me about the Bren carrier. What do you think of the Bren carrier?
Well, I had very little experience of it because it was shortly afterwards I transferred to the glider paladin. But in my time in the Bren carrier, we loved it in that we could move off-road and also use the Bren carrier to shield our mortar, because it could fire over the top of the Bren gun carrier or whatever it was shooting at. So that was an added advantage, there was more protection for the mortar crew. I think we used to carry the mortar crew, the mortar itself, and about 60 odd rounds of ammunition, 60 shells, something like that.
Now, just before you leave the thing, you attend three courses. Now, we're always interested in training. The first one's a PT course. What do you remember about that?
Well, I was on parade one day and the sergeant said, McGoffey said, I want to see you after parade. He said, we're sending you on a PT course. Well, I was never one of the leading lights in physical training. It was just an average. He sent me down to Colchester and I spent a fortnight learning how to instruct others in physical training from the Army School of Physical Training at Colchester. A fortnight.
And what did they teach you? What were you learning? What do you remember of it?
Horse vaulting, climbing frames. That's what I remember most. And how to instruct others to do the same as you were being taught to do.
Did you enjoy the course?
I absolutely loved it. But I never, on returning to the Essex Regiment, I never, or even in the glider part, I never took physical training again in my life.
Now,
never instructed in it.
So now, what's the second course you went on? A sniper's course.
That was at Great Yarmouth, outside of Great Yarmouth. And we did a sniping course. And we had the targets set out on the sea, floating targets on buoys. And we used to fire at those. And I very, very interesting course that. I forget how long we were there, but we learned the technique of sniping, how to conceal yourself.
Now, were you a good shot by then?
Average.
That's Lee Enfield, isn't it?
Lee Enfield, I mean, just average shot. I wasn't anything special.
So why had you been picked for a sniper's course?
I don't know. And I don't know why I was picked for the PT course. Didn't know.
Now, the third course you go on is a junior NCO course. Tell me about that.
Oh, yes. I was sent off to Barnsley, to Stainbridge Castle near Barnsley, which was then used by the military. And that was for potential sergeants and so on, troop commanders. So I was a corporal at the time. And
now, what was the course like?
Very, 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 very intensive. Stalking each other, forming defensive positions, attacking enemy positions which were heavily fortified, and so on. And rather to my surprise, at the end of the course, I got recommended for a commission.
Now, how come? How did you jump to that? From, you know, what do you think it impressed them about you?
Well, I don't know really. I was only an infantry, just a corporal, as a full corporal. But at the end of the course, they said you'd done quite well, and we're going to recommend your commanding officer. You'll be granted a chance to become an officer, which was rather pleasing for me, an Irish peasant from the bogs of Ireland and a potential officer in the British Army.
Now what happened? Because you have an interview, don't you? Tell me what happened.
When I went back, of course, there was any course you went on, you're always interviewed by your CO at the end of the course. So I was interviewed by my commanding officer, Lieutenant Colonel Laurie Chell, DSO, MC and Bar. That was his full title. He was company commander. He was in charge of us. And he said, McGoffey says, I'm pleased to say you've been recommended for the commission, but I never heard anything else, never any further. So evidently he thought to himself, he's not the type that I want in the army,
What do you think? What do you mean by that? Can you just explain about it? It's obvious, but can you just explain in your own words a bit?
Well,
why weren't you this time?
Well, perhaps I hadn't got the old school. A lot of the officers had boarding school accents. Most of them were English. Well, I was an Irish accent, and from Ireland. And perhaps he thought I wouldn't fit in with the rest of them. That's the only thing I can assume. I may misjudge them, but that's all I can think.
Now, you were promoted to corporal, weren't you?
I was already a corporal.
Oh, you were already a corporal?
Already a corporal.
Full corporal.
Full
corporal. What difference did it make when you were a full corporal?
Well, I was made a full corporal to take charge of the 3-inch mortar crew. I was completely in charge of the 3-inch mortar crew. Everything to do with that mortar was my responsibility. The training of the crew, the efficiency in firing, targeting, everything else. That was my. That's why I was a corporal.
Now, what difference did that make to you? Did you enjoy the responsibility?
I enjoyed the decision making. I enjoyed the decision making, making decisions. And for the rest of my career, both in the army and in the fire service, I was always used to making decisions. It's nice when men come to you and say, "What should we do, Corporal? Do this, that, the other?" And you have to decide. It's on you.
What did you think of your officers at this stage? I mean, because now you're getting to be an experienced soldier. You're still young, but you're getting experience.
Yeah.
What did you think of your NCO? Well, your NCOs and your officers.
Well, one of the NCOs that we had was a Lance Corporal when I first joined, and he'd been in the pre-war British Army in India. He was a typical pre-war soldier. But he was a very, very, very kind-hearted man, really, but he taught us all he knew. But the subsequent young officers who came in, and the NCOs, the sergeant, they were quite good, quite efficient, never bullied us, shouted at you, But all this thing about being bullied and hit didn't happen.
Now, what about the officers? What do you think of them? Did they know their stuff? Were they good?
They were quite good. They were quite good. We always had respect for them, and obviously we thought they knew better than us, and we did what we were told. But I've never seen an officer make any bad decision, except, of course, the catering officer that I've already spoken about.
Now, what about, you mentioned here, your pride in your unit. Now, it's quite, I'd like you to talk about your pride in the Essex Regiment at the time, because, of course, you weren't Irish, you weren't from Essex, you were Irish.
Yeah.
You had nothing to do with them, you hadn't asked to be in them, you knew nothing about them, you didn't even know where Essex was.
No.
So how did they get you to be proud? Do you see, how did they work that? I mean, and part of
the recruit training, of the military training, was lectures about regimental history. And they emphasised the regimental history. And every soldier in the Essex Regiment, under his regimental title, the Essex Regiment, wore a purple sash. And they told you the reason for you did that. The reason for the cap badge, which was the Gibraltar Castle and the key to the Mediterranean. And about when they were raised, the Essex Regiment were raised, originally the 44th and 56th of foot, and how they came to be designated the Essex Regiment. But I found from soldiers that I've spoken to since, and even then, every man thought his regiment was the best in the British Army, and the Essex Regiment. And I got taken up with this. I was drawn into the fact that I was a soldier in the Essex Regiment.
So you did read about them, you were proud of them, you knew what they'd done.
Oh, yes, of course. But they are.
Now, another thing is...
Just one thing. I was reading a thing about... armies in general, it said that in the British Army you join a family, in every other army you join the army, you've got no particular attraction for the unit you're in, but that's one of the strengths of the British Army, to instill so much pride in each man in his regiment, and even the worst laggards wouldn't let the regiment down no matter what else they did. They're always proud of the regiment.
Now, I believe one thing that's interesting is you saw a German propaganda film called War in the West or something.
Well, frighten the life out of us.
Now, tell us about it. Was it War in the West? Did you know
this
title?
I think that's the title. One. They took us to a cinema in Southend-on-Sea and showed us this German propaganda film about.
Now, why did they do that?
Well, I presume they thought it was part, and in my opinion, it was part of training to see what you were expected to meet if you ever came in combat against them. And
what impression did it make? What did you think about the film?
Well, also, of course, propaganda films, all the errors are eased out before it becomes visible to the public or to the other soldiers. But I was very efficient how quickly got the machine guns into position, how they moved over the ground, etc. Just, they looked so efficient. Made us a bit softer when we come out. We thought, no, they're good, the Germans.
Did that stay with you long?
It did, yes.
Now,